Who are we and who do we want to become? So many options and so much advice. But if you don't feel yourself, you just follow along. Farah went from dreams to reality and from reality back to dreams, while noticing that even in reality there are a lot of dreams hiding and waiting to get unfolded. How Farah lost faith in her dreams. How a single piece of advice changed her life completely, and how she faces her fears to live the life she wants to live, you will hear in the following episode.
Episode 27, I just figured out, we're recording now, and I just asked you how to pronounce your name. It's
Farah.
Farah.
Yeah.
Farah.
I would say like Farah Fawcett.
Which I had a hard time to pick up who that is.
Oh, really? She's just an icon. She was in the Charlie's Angels. She was kind of like the poster girl that everyone used to say they have in their bedroom at times.
Right. Yeah. Is that a relation to?
No, not at all. No. My parents didn't even name me after her. Surprisingly, I get that question a lot. Were you named after Farah Fawcett?
Right.
No.
Because I never heard that name yet since I'm in Canada.
Right.
I would like to start with... do you remember where and when we met the first time? Like where we encountered the first time?
I want to say Maze of Life, but that wasn't the first time.
I had a hard time too because I thought it must be before that.
Exactly, because I feel like we came into that movie knowing each other already. Yeah. Had to have been on set somewhere.
It might have been some background work, yeah.
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 I'm really bad.
So we're both not remembering. Okay.
That's fine. I remember we had an instant connection though. Like whenever I talk to you, I feel like we can talk for days and days and days.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I invited you to
in
my podcast.
And I could listen to you play guitar all day. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for being here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
We want to dig in a bit into your life, into your story. And often I hear from guests, and you said it in the beginning before, I never did that. I never been in a podcast. I never talked about myself.
No.
I'm not interesting. My life is boring.
Yeah.
And I actually thought that about my life.
Really?
For a long time. And I sometimes still do that. But it's also a reason why I put out this platform in form of a podcast. Where I'm like, not everybody's interesting.
So true, right?
Everybody has a story to tell.
I love hearing people's stories.
And you love actually hearing other people's stories.
Yeah. I feel like I want to ask you more questions than you're asking me.
You can ask me all the time.
Oh, that's, okay, yeah, great. Okay.
Totally
so it goes
fair.
Both ways. Great.
It is an open conversation.
Okay.
But I want to know, where did your story start it?
Oh, gosh.
As Farah.
Well, yeah. I haven't really gone very far. I mean, I've been born and raised here on the island, so... Born in Duncan, moved to Victoria when I was little, and have never left, except for I lived for a small time in the UK. But I think that's why I feel like my life isn't very interesting, because I feel like I've just been on this island, this rock, my whole life.
But it is interesting, because I don't meet a lot of people who actually are born and raised on the island and still. I mean, they're still here, but like, I don't have a lot of people, and I've met a lot of people in the 3 years I'm here.
Where are they mostly from?
Mostly they move from somewhere. Mm-hmm. Ontario, England, other places.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, one of my last guests was born in Duncan too.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Anyways, you were born in Duncan.
Yeah. Yeah, moved here when I was about 8 years old. I remember distinctively because I was in grade 3. And I was so embarrassed because my very first introduction to friends at the school, my parents really wanted to get me involved in choir because, you know, I'll get into that, but I started as like a little performer at home. And I remember it was, I think, November when we moved into Victoria. And they wouldn't allow me to join the choir because they'd already started, they'd already had their songs, they'd already been performing together. And I remember my dad marching into the school down the hallway talking to the choir teacher, and I was like, you have to have her in your choir. She's going to be one of your best singers, and we want her to perform, and you need to see her. And I remember doing a little thing for the choir teacher, and they let me in. So, but I was so embarrassed because then I came into choir class, and they gave me the solos. And I was like, oh no, here I'm in the new kid, the goody two shoes, and getting all the solos, and everyone's going to hate me. And yeah, it was a lot of pressure in grade three.
Did they hate you?
There was some jealousy yeah. from a fellow singer, but at the end of the day, she actually saved my butt a couple of times because, yeah, I got stage fright and had a couple interactions performing where I just went cold and she helped me out and we became really close friends after that.
So singing is a big part in your life.
Yeah, It used to be. Yeah, really getting back into it now. But
and you said when you were in grade three, your dad pushed you into choir.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you remember your first interaction with yourself? Like, oh, I actually like singing, or I can sing, or I'm...
Well, my dad...
Because grade three is pretty early on.
Your classes teach you songs, and I'd come home after school, and I'd perform my songs in front of my parents. So I just remember seeing videos of myself at a young age. My dad loved to record everything and take photos, and there's still one video that I remember. It's called Gloop Gloop and the little green frog, and my sister's beside me, and she's 5 years older than me, and she was super shy, but I was just like, look at me!
Yeah.
And so they kind of knew that I had this ability to perform and love to make people laugh, and I'd be yeah. the one at the dinner table. I'm one of five siblings, and I'd be the one making jokes and love making everyone laugh.
Where in your order you are?
I am the second youngest.
Second youngest.
Three brothers, one sister.
Interesting. I'm the youngest of five.
Are you two? Okay. Yeah. What's the makeup? How many brothers and sisters?
Two and two.
Two and two. Okay.
So three and two, I think.
Yeah. Interesting.
Three boys.
And you love being part of a big family?
I do love being part of a big family. Yeah. Even harder it is for me sometimes to be here and so far away.
Right.
But it also is for me a door open, since I'm so far away, to actually do what I want to do. Because I always felt like taking so much care about the family and my siblings and my parents and everything and friends, holding me back from what I actually want to pursue.
Interesting, being the youngest mm-hmm. too. Usually you hear that from the oldest,
mm-hmm.
taking care of the family.
And not that I didn't do anything for that in Germany, but I've realized since I'm further away, I'm more determined in what I'm doing and don't think about the bigger... Yeah. Outcome.
But it's hard to be away from them.
It's hard in a good way. It's not like I'm suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because the time we get is more quality time than before.
Nice.
Because you get used to like weekend events, birthdays, mm-hmm. Christmas things, couple days, couple hours,
mm-hmm.
and then it's gone, mm-hmm. and you're not really connecting.
Right.
And yeah, now
you take that for granted, right?
Yeah. And now I have like whenever I go or they come, I have like 1, 2, 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
With one or two persons quality time instead of like door open, come on in, event done, by right? Yeah. So it's
that's good. You still get back there.
I have to remind myself to do that to realize that there's a big benefit of it too, that I'm
mm-hmm.
so far away.
Mm-hmm. And do you want a big family as well?
I have nothing against it. I love kids. I love children.
Mm-hmm.
You
work with kids, right?
I work over 20 years with kids now.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm just 20, but...
I still feel 15.
But if it happens, yes. If not, mm-hmm. I'm fine. Like, mm-hmm. I always have my... It's kind of like... It's probably what my mom thought, too.
Mm-hmm.
She always had... Like, she was a teacher.
Okay.
And she always had kids around.
Yes.
And I'm like, if I get five children, it's fine. If I don't,
yeah,
I know that I always be around younger
yes.
humans.
Right.
And
I just find that's a common with people that come from bigger families. Usually want bigger families as well because they love being surrounded by. And I miss that sometimes. Like if I go to bed late at night, I have to have sound on because I'm used to being like hearing my family downstairs and the chitter chatter. And same with the mornings. I love waking up to the chitter chatter of my siblings and my parents and. So I hate being alone.
Do
you?
I love being alone. I love when it's quiet.
Just why you probably love it out here.
Yeah. But I know, like, I know the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
You have that. I think I passed that age where I had exactly the same, where I like, needed some, where I needed just social
mm-hmm.
parts around me.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's more like I really want to connect with myself. I really need to be on myself more. Mm-hmm. My own more.
Like, I feel like we have phases where between extroverts and introverts. I don't think there's such thing as just one
or
the other.
I just figured out there's a scientist just talked about there's a middle.
I think, yeah, I'm a middle.
Is it introvert or something?
Is that what it's called?
They call it?
Okay.
Maybe it's wrong. I will look it up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually, you like to be social but not be the and like the focus of attention.
Okay.
Right? So that makes sense because there's not just black and white.
Exactly. And I think no like or alone.
But you have already a family.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How big is your family?
I have 3 kids. Yeah. Okay. And I'm with my husband, so. And I think that's, you know, part of why I even got into film now is because I sort of hit this point where my oldest is 15 and I was a mom really early on. I was 22, I guess, by now. Mm-hmm. And I knew I always wanted to be a mom. That was a big part of my life. I knew I wanted a big family and kids. And but my life was so much about them for the last 15 years that I went through this period of like finding myself again and coming back to what I love. It's like, what makes me happy? What defines me besides
who am I?
Exactly. Yeah. You go through kind of like that midlife crisis. It's a real thing. And you start reflecting. I'm like, well, what do I want to do for the next 10 years of my life? So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you mentioned already the filming. That's where we kind of met.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to your singing.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a dream when you were younger to become a singer, to be a singer?
I think so.
Because it sounds like you don't scare to be the focus of attention.
Mm-hmm.
You don't scare to be on stage. You you like the spotlight.
Yeah.
Was that early on, like, okay, that's what I want to do, it's what I want to be?
For sure. Yeah, definitely early on. I feel like as a kid, you have no fear.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you're in that phase of like, yes, I want to be the center of attention, and especially I think maybe being one of 5 maybe influenced that a little bit because I was lost amongst the whole family. And
yeah, you try to find stand your out spot.
Right?
Yeah.
And that was my way of, I was getting attention, I was getting the laughs, I was the performer, and that's where I got my attention. And so same with at school, how do you stand out? I was never the smart one, I was never the pretty one, I was the ugly duckling for sure. I grew up with a short boy cut, I was so made fun of and so bullied, and so I didn't stand out in any way. And so I think by performing, it really filled my cup and found my way that way. But getting older, I feel like as I progressed through singing, I'd enter every talent show, then the nerves, the anxiety, and the fear fills you. And so that becoming a reality really flipped for me, like more in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after, you know, not getting every role and there'd be the better singer than you, the better dancer than you. And, you know, I really wanted to go to film school, actually, but my parents really tried to set me on a path that was more reasonable and more, you know, I think family oriented instead of going to LA and living out of your car and maybe auditioning for years and not
that's what I wanted to do. Mind?
Yeah, I really did. That was what I was set on, is I wanted to perform and I wanted to go to film school. And they just really sat me down one time and was like, is this really realistic? Like, is that, it's not really a family life, and you've always known you wanted a family. And so and yeah, I was kind of talked out of it a little
interesting bit. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that advice now?
Ah, it's interesting you say that, because there's part of me that has that regret that I didn't. And also because I didn't really know so much about the film industry. I didn't really have an introduction to it by any way. Like, I just knew my life through musical theater and performing, and I was taking vocal lessons, went to the Victoria Conservatory of Music, and I didn't know so much about the industry to know how much there is to do in the industry besides just being a performer. So had I have known then what I know now, then I would have just kept going, realizing that there's other things to do in the background to learn the industry besides just being a performer. There's so much value in learning how to direct being a PA or all the different roles, and really respecting those roles to be able to get to, I think, the privilege of performing.
Yeah.
There is a huge regret, because I still want to go to film school now. And then there's part of me that's like, oh my God, I'm 38 years old. So am I too late for that? Is that, you know, I just keep taking courses. I still have my family to raise. So is that realistic for me? You know, time, money, all those things.
I think that's a legit thought you have there. But I think on the other side, and I noticed it as well, because I really wanted to be an actor when I was coming out of school.
Me too, yeah.
And I was so scared, and I was so on my own. I was like panicking in front of auditions, and I went to different schools in Germany, and some I skipped because I was too scared to do it.
Yeah, the fear is real.
Yeah. And then I let it slip, and I'm like, I'm not ready for this. I'm not good enough. I'm too scared. I'm not doing it.
Oh, yes.
But it's always there. And I thought the train left. I missed the train. And when I was traveling and arriving on the island and do all the things I did, I realized, because I let everything go. Like, I was just me in the world. I could choose where I go, what I do, or what I want to do. And I was like, and then this dream came up again. It's like, you always wanted to be an actor. Why are you not doing it? Why are you not trying it?
Yeah.
And because I went over so much fear on the way to here, I was probably ready then to like, okay, let's face that fear too.
Yeah.
And it's never too late. And that's what, since I'm doing it, everybody says like, it's a lifelong journey.
That's right.
And yes, I maybe missed 15 years of it because I did other things, but it maybe prepared me to do it in the way I do it now.
Yeah, that's a good point. We just maybe weren't ready for
and I think I thought about actually when your parents gave you that advice and you probably followed it and created your family, I sometimes miss that too.
Oh, interesting.
Because I always wanted a family earlier on, and now you actually can do both. Right?
Yeah,
so you yeah, if you see it that way, you have your family now. Now you can do what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I have I am on the other side, like I do what I want to do, but I still don't have my family, which will come, but it took me longer than I was hoping for.
So when you first came into the island, like what did you come out here looking for? Or did you come to the island first, or where did you come from after Germany?
No, I went to the Yukon. Golden in the Rockies first for a couple of weeks, month. And then I went to the Yukon to work in a resort. I had a job offer that was awesome. But I noticed that at that stage, with my passions for football, soccer, and acting, and it was very remote up there. It was beautiful, but I needed more more life around me.
More opportunities.
And I love nature, and I love to be in nature, but I was like, oh, if I settle here, that's gonna be a very difficult trip. So I followed this idea I had to learn how to coach football, soccer, and English, and that guided me to the island.
I always wonder how people choose the island, like especially from a place like Germany. Like, how do people even know about the island?
And so this is the thing. this is the thing, and I'm 100% honest with that. All the people from Victoria, I'm apologizing. I didn't know Victoria exists.
Exactly.
4 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, it doesn't surprise me.
And I only heard from Vancouver Island because one of my best friends from Germany was about to move here, a year before I came to Canada, and I never heard about Vancouver Island before. I knew that it's Canada.
So we like it that way.
Right? And it's good. Okay, we don't talk about it?
Exactly. Us islanders, is like, we don't want that bridge to Vancouver. There's a part of the reason why we stay here. Is this hidden gem, right?
Yeah, and then it was like, and then, yeah, my friend was like, yeah, I'm going to Vancouver Island to Tofino, work at a surf camp. I was like, okay, whatever that is. Yeah. And then weeks later, I looked at it, I was like, oh, there's a huge island.
Yeah.
Next to Vancouver,
yeah.
It looks like, if you just look at, like, don't zoom in, it looks like an unsettled island. It looks wild. And I didn't even saw that there's a city called Victoria.
I think we're even bigger than the UK, aren't we? I mean,
the island?
England?
It's it is possible. It's huge. I think it's bigger than Switzerland, for sure. And then I was in the Rockies, working on that ranch with the family, and they were talking about people going to Victoria for study, and I'm like, where is this Victoria? And then I started looking up Victoria, and like, whoa, there's a big city on Vancouver Island, and it's actually the capital of BC. And that was the first time I'm like, okay, that is actually existing. And then my friend told me it's pretty nice. And then I made my own idea. Was like, okay, I live in the Rockies, I go to the Yukon, and on the end of my working holiday visa, I go to Vancouver Island and check out what I can do for soccer, football, and then if I really like it in Canada, I have probably three great spots I know. Do I want to stay there or there?
How cool is that?
I'm still here.
Choose where you want to go. It's very freeing in a way.
Yeah, I think I had to do that to, like, find more purpose in what I'm doing. Like, hey, this is my decision. Mm-hmm. This was my decision.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt like people tell me what I could, should do, and I was not confident to do actually what I didn't know what I want.
Right.
And then when I left everything behind in a good way and traveled on my own for a couple of years and started this project mm-hmm. as well.
So cool.
You just notice, okay, all the decisions I made are my decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, you like missed all those parts because you had mm-hmm. early on a family.
Yeah.
It's not about you anymore.
Yeah.
I was really trying to embrace that because I know at one point I will have family.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not about me anymore. And then I don't want to sit there
mm-hmm.
as the grumpy parent. Like, yeah, I never had my time, you know? Like,
Grump, that's a good way to categorize us.
You know, like, no, like...
Our sports parents on the sidelines are some of those grumpy parents. What am I doing in this rain watching my child's life?
I noticed that so often in relationships that I was like... that I was like, I'm still missing myself in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to solve that was for me, okay, I need to figure out who I am
mm-hmm.
and who am I and what do I want.
Mm-hmm.
And since I did this journey for myself, I just know that I'm much more relaxed and much more
mm-hmm.
Flexible
mm-hmm.
in what I need and what others need.
I feel like it's an ongoing question in your life, though, right? Like, it's refreshing to hear you say you're, you know, going through that thought process, like, who I am, where do I want to go?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it ever really leaves you.
I don't think so.
You know, like,
no.
Who am I? Just, like, your phases of life. You're constantly yeah. asking those questions to yourself.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, where you kind of reset and why I do believe that midlife crisis is real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you get to that point, you're like, oh my gosh, your life is almost split in these different phases.
Yeah.
Like, where do I go from here? Is a constant reset. What do they call it? Every 7 years, your 7-year itch. You heard of that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
been real for me for sure.
I think it's, yeah, I have that not on point 7 years, but I can tell you around every 7 years,
mm-hmm.
I'm in a very, very crazy phase of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Just turning 36 a month ago.
Ah,
last year.
Related.
Thanks. Last year, 35, I had the deepest burnout depression in my life.
Really?
And at one point I was like, oh yeah, it's just that time
mm-hmm.
where you have to go through again,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
it's tough and it's exhausting, but it will prepare you for the next phase if you stay in it.
It'll drive you, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you know that the only person to get you out of that phase is you.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the same thought process going through a bit of a dark period. It's like, well, it's not my partner's job to make me happy. It's not my kid's job to make me happy. That's not why I had kids.
They can be so, sparks.
Absolutely.
And they are.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
And friends and
yeah.
family. Yeah.
But,
yeah. But you have to light it up.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's actually, that was my thought process getting into film was, what is going to make me happy?
Mm.
And this just, yeah.
Do you know that, I know if I just always spread that, and I don't know if there's a scientific proof,
mm-hmm.
that if when you sing,
mm-hmm.
that you're not able to feel the feeling of fear.
Really?
Did you, like, maybe
yeah.
think about it.
Yeah.
I picked that up at one point. I think one of my old music teachers told me that, or I picked it up somewhere, that when you sing out loud, just sing,
yeah.
Your brain, your body's not able to actually be scared or feared because it's not working together.
I mean, I wish that were real when you're standing on stage performing, because like, the fear is real when you're performing.
But if you're really in that moment of singing, you
yeah.
reconnect to your
you
voice.
You get into it. Hmm.
I noticed that it's actually
do you?
True in most, yeah. There's a
yeah.
stage fright,
I'll
think.
I'll have to pay attention to that.
But in general, if I sing, I'm
yeah.
I'm just singing. There's nothing else.
It definitely relieves endorphins. I mean,
yeah.
I have playlists on my phone. It's just called sad songs, happy songs, because
yeah.
no matter what fit, like your emotion is at the time, I'll put on music to help you know, bring me out of a mood, surprisingly, even with sad songs, yes.
Yeah. It's, right? It's, yeah, yeah. So, okay, before, I want to know more about how you get into acting, but what's your, how did your singing music career, how did that go?
I mean,
you decided not to go into LA.
Yeah, I ended pretty quickly.
Do
the family thing. Well, so, I mean, after high school, after my, like, not going to film school, what am I going to do? I actually was going to be a kindergarten teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into UVic to do the ECE, the Early Childhood Education Program. And thank God I did a little, I don't know, you call it career day or something at a kindergarten class for a week. And after that week, I was like, what the hell was I thinking? I cannot do this for the rest of my life. I love kids, but man, I give so much kudos to kindergarten teachers because being around that energy, and it was exhausting. I was like, what am I doing? I don't want to do this. I knew I wanted to have kids. That was just dead certain in my life. I wanted to be a mom.
But not 15 or 20 every day.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be exhausted at the end of the day, that I didn't want to spend time with my own kids at the end of the day. I went to my school counselor and I said, so I don't want to do this program. I don't want to go to UVic, but what are my options? I'm too late now to choose a different program. It's like, well, there's this thing called a gap program. Have you heard of it? And it's like, you take your gap year between high school and university and you go traveling and they hook you up with another place to work somewhere in the world and put down three choices of where you want to live. Australia was number one. God, I still want to go to Australia so bad. Italy was number two. And then the UK was my number three. Got the UK.
Oh, that's right, the UK.
Yeah, and okay. So that's where I got to live in England and work in an all-girls boarding school. So really, after school, my path went completely sideways because I'm like, I don't know what to do with my life. Well, I was supposed to be there for a year, but then I got hit by a car out in the UK. And I came home pretty quickly because I got a rod in my leg. I broke my leg and my pelvis, and I was bedridden for months just having to relearn how to walk again. So that cut my trip short, unfortunately. And I really thought that I was going to go to the UK, fall in love, and then my life was going to be somewhere. And because I was the happiest traveling, like it was, oh God, I love traveling.
What happened with the car accident?
And well, like I was hit as a pedestrian. So I was crossing the street. I was on my way to go pick up a girlfriend at the train station, and it was nighttime.
In London?
Just outside London was where the all-girls boarding school was,
right.
Called the Masonic School for Girls. And it's a long story, actually. I was freaked out about crossing the street because there's a van on the other side of the crosswalk. There was a man in the van, and my mom had freaked me out about sex trafficking, going over to the UK, and being careful being a
female. They're driving on the other side.
Yeah, exactly. I did not look the wrong way, okay? That's the one thing I will say. As a Canadian, even the police report, they didn't take me seriously. It was just like, dumb Canadian looked the wrong way. It's another pedestrian. That's not what happened.
Yeah.
But I actually don't remember what happened. I do remember just crossing the street, not at the crosswalk, because I was afraid of the van on the other side. And I remember looking left, looking right.
Wait, so you were afraid of the van of the other side because of what?
Because on the other side of the crosswalk, and I was by myself, and I did not want to get kidnapped or picked up.
Oh, was it day or night?
Nighttime.
It was nighttime.
And up the other side of the all-girls boarding school, I'm like, why is this van just sitting there? I was freaking out, man, so.
Who planted that?
Oh, my mother. Right? Like, don't ever walk by yourself, especially at night, and be careful of sex traffickers, and, like, that's huge in the UK, and so all these, like, bad things had gotten in my head, and I was like, I'm not crossing the street and passing that van by myself. So I did not want to cross at the crosswalk.
But isn't it interesting how this decision-making works?
Right? Yeah.
Based on...
Changed the whole course of my life. Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Little things. And then you decide, okay, I'm not going over that crosswalk.
No. So I crossed the street at a different place down further, and obviously I didn't look the right way. So, yeah, got schmucked. I don't remember what happened. I don't have memory of that. My memory is waking up from being unconscious. So I had some amazing people help take care of me.
How far do you remember? Just before you start walking or while you're walking?
So what I had done is I actually picked up a cell phone. I had a flip phone in my purse.
While you're walking?
While I was walking, because somewhere along the way, someone told me the safety tip of, like, pretend you're on the phone if you're being followed and someone thinks you're alone so that someone knows your whereabouts, right?
Mm-hmm.
I heard that as a safety tip, so I picked up my phone. I pretended I was talking to some random person. And I was distracted, and likely it was because I didn't see the car coming and didn't look the other way the second time. But
And then you never arrived at the place where your friend was.
That's right. Yeah.
Waiting for you.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
I know.
And that was really before, when was that, 20 years ago? No, 18?
Yeah, I was 18. Yeah. After I graduated.
Yeah.
So I flew right home. Well, I didn't fly right home. I had surgery in England.
Yeah.
So they put the rod in my leg. Great healthcare, by the way. They were amazing.
Were you life in danger?
No, I didn't have life-threatening injuries, like no brain injuries. Thank God. Sometimes I wonder, but... No, surprisingly, I did not have a concussion. Morphine was great at the time, but yeah. No, I came home right away. My parents helped.
Well, how long was that in your trip in the UK?
I was 6 months in. So I got to travel to Germany, actually, in Italy, and my sister was supposed to meet me for a trip. We're gonna go to Ireland and Scotland. I was really looking forward to that trip. We never went. Our school was gonna go to Greece. So looking forward to going to Greece. So yeah, I've just done a lot of traveling.
So, and then you went back.
And so I came back, and while I was recovering, so I was bedridden for quite some time and doing rehab and learning how to walk again in the pool, I took my real estate course because that was one of the few programs at the time you could do online. Online learning wasn't really a thing back then.
Yeah.
So my mom encouraged me. My mom's a business owner. She's a financial advisor. And she says, just to keep busy, why don't you do your course?
Yeah.
Why don't you get into real estate? So I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, I can do that. I'm a social person. I can sell things. Why not?
Definitely.
And I finished my course and got into real estate. I sold real estate for 3 years. And by that time, I'd already met my now husband and got pregnant and started my family. And so when I had my first baby, I was like, this is not really that fun. I didn't have a paid maternity leave. So I was working as soon as she was born and was carrying around her car seat to open houses and with, you know, showing houses with my clients, with my baby beside me. And so when I was at home, I felt guilty that I wasn't making money and showing homes while I was taking care of her. And while I was, you know, working, I felt bad that I wasn't spending time with her. So I was like, this sucks. This is not a way I want to raise my family and be a mom. So got out of real estate pretty quickly and took like a part-time job at a rec center and auxiliary to government. And then eventually I got into government. So I've been there for 15 years.
No singing.
So yeah, you asked me about singing.
Yeah, but
that was really the course of my life.
That's part of the story, right?
Yeah, part of the story is that it happened so quickly. It was a whirlwind of an accident really changed the course of my life to like, what the hell am I going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
And never went to school.
What would have happened if we don't know, but what do you think would have happened when you would have hit by the car?
I truly believe I probably would have stayed traveling. Because even when I came home, I never knew what I wanted to do. Like nothing ever really settled and felt right to me.
Mm.
And so I feel like missing out on, you know, not going to film school, not performing. And there was just that part of me that felt restless. And so I probably would have stayed traveling for a long time. Had I have actually gone to, you know, Scotland and Ireland and Greece, I'm sure I would have met someone along the way and it would have changed my whole trajectory. But instead I came home and settled in, stayed on this rock forever. So,
which is great.
Yeah.
Which is a great path.
Absolutely. I think. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. And then when did music came back into your life? When did you pick it up again?
That's a good question. I have a friend and he's been playing guitar in local bars here for a little while. And he was also born and raised singing in churches, and I sang in churches. It's actually where I found, you know, a lot of my voice too. I used to lead like our church choir and whatnot back in the day. And so he knew I could sing, and he had messaged me one time. He's like, hey, we should get together and just jam for fun. And he was getting out and doing more gigs around town. And so this was only a couple of years ago. I was like, yeah, that'd be amazing. I'd love to get music back in my life. I really miss music. I never did play an instrument, so I'm so envious you play a guitar. God, I'd love to learn guitar. But I'm not that well coordinated that way. And so singing with him just brought so much more joy and life back into my soul.
Yeah.
And I realized I was very much out of practice. Like singing after all these years has been like something I need to get back into and, you know, exercise that muscle again. And so I did a couple gigs with him around town, and that was extremely fun. And just, it's really just been time. Like, time has been my biggest enemy by still running my kids around. And I'd love to get together and rehearse more. I have another friend that invited me to do a show with him actually a couple months ago that I turned down for a film, for some film work. So yeah, it's slowly making its way back in my life, and I just need to really build up that confidence again that I can do it, because it has been so long since I've performed and sang. So I need to get some practice and spend some time.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is. And then, but do you, so you connect, do you connect it now? Is it in the way with the acting?
I wouldn't say it's in the way.
Because I just thought about, you had this role in the movie we worked together with.
Yeah.
You were a singer in that movie.
Good point. Yeah. Oh,
funny fact.
Of life. Yeah. Right? That's right.
Yeah. Is there, what's the.
I think they complement each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, having the ability to sing and then being able to do that in film, like, yeah, doing Maze of Life was so much fun for me.
Mm.
And actually having someone believe in me that I can do that, I think that meant more to me. I'm going to cry. Don't make me cry.
It is a big one. It is a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a big deal for me because that was really my first time putting both together. And it was an incredible feeling. So,
yeah.
Yeah, knowing that I can do it and have that back in my life has really given me a lot more confidence to stick with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even if it's just the spark somebody turns on with telling you, I believe in you, creates the belief from yourself in
exactly.
yourself back again. Right?
Yeah, someone sees something in you, and that's sometimes just that little, you know, door that you need to open to be like, ooh,
I have
maybe
that...
those voices in my head are wrong, you know, because like you say, it's all about beating that mindset, negative mindset, and those negative voices.
Yeah. I notice that a lot with my partner now, that the whole time I was not in a relationship, I was the spark, and I had to turn it on
mm-hmm.
day by day,
mm-hmm.
and which was great, but it's tough. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And since I'm in this relationship, I noticed how helpful of it is if somebody is just there and believes in you, whatever you do.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And that just gives you the extra energy to do things you would not do often. And cross that bridge to like actually make things happen. Yeah.
Everyone needs their little sideline cheerleaders and their supporters in their corner, because there's always going to be someone also on the sidelines telling you that you suck and you can't
exactly.
do it, or you sound terrible, or that was awful.
And even if maybe it's your own voice.
For sure. And so you have to really fall back on those ones like, you know, that do believe in you. And, you know, sometimes I think that social media can be both a positive and a negative. And I don't know if you've noticed this with posting some of your work, but sometimes you post that seed for a little bit of validation, or I don't know,
for sure.
Like, you know, those are some of the reasons I do. Like, okay, I'm just going to put this out there and see how it lands. Like, does this work? Am I on the right path? You know, should I even pursue this further? And so getting, a little bit of those compliments here and there definitely fills you. And like you say, that spark, that's where it can come from.
For me, it wasn't like with social media in the past. I mean, in general, I tried to, because I didn't have social media for a long, long time until I started the podcast.
Mm.
And then since I started, I made sure for myself, social media for me is giving.
Mm-hmm.
I offer something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it will inspire 1, 2, 3, 5, maybe more people.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a consumer.
Which
turned out I am, of course, from time to time, I am a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I try to never really post something, because I want to have some feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Because I only post, or mostly of the time I post, oh, actually, there's some, and that's what we said in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
I'm not interested in interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, there's actually something which is interesting about myself, which I am now ready to share and let it go and give other people the chance to
mm-hmm.
enjoy it,
mm-hmm.
especially with music.
Mm-hmm.
Or the podcast, I'm like, hey, this is great. Like, I have this conversation with you. Now I'm giving it to the world,
mm-hmm.
and maybe one or two people will listen to it.
Let me ask you something. So if you were to post something and it goes sideways on you and you get negativity, would you still move on with something just out of pure passion? Would you still move forward even if you were like, oh my gosh, everyone hated it? Would you still be driven?
It never happened. like so far, never.
Which is great, and it wouldn't because you're really talented. But I feel like
I would not care too much about the negative,
mm-hmm.
because there's whatever you, if you do what you like, and you if it's music, if it's a podcast, if it's modeling, whatever I put out there,
mm-hmm.
is very personal,
mm-hmm.
but it's also like, look what I'm doing here. You can see what I'm doing, and maybe you get inspired, maybe not. Maybe mm-hmm. you like it. Maybe it makes your day.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like it,
mm-hmm.
it's not my business.
Yeah.
Right. And that's fine. But I had the big fear of that before I went back to social media, because I'm so much in my head often that I think, oh, what do they think? What if they don't like it? What if they,
mm-hmm.
and I had to figure out that pattern of my thoughts, like, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You not put it out there for the people who don't like it. You put it out there for the people who might get something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't get something out of it, like, what do? If you see something you don't like,
mm-hmm.
do you keep following?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
If they keep following me and they don't like it, that's your problem, that you spend time with something you don't like.
Yeah.
But it's not in my control. Like, if yeah. it's.
Love that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I had to realize, that if people don't like what I'm doing and keep following and watching and judging me, it's your wasted energy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
And knowing that there's enough people out there who like what you do. And it's probably the same for you, where you like, oh, what if people judge me negatively and
mm-hmm.
Not being nice, maybe make a stupid comment.
Yeah, always. I refrain from posting a lot. I mean, even on my own social media, like, it's, you know, I'll post pictures here and there and a lot of set stuff. And I've changed a lot of how I do on social media, but like live videos and my everyday movements, like, that's not me. That's not who I am. And that's not.
Yeah.
And probably because I am more afraid of judgment than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And shouldn't be, but.
I think that's the game you have to play, where you're like,
mm-hmm.
I don't mm-hmm. care about the people who don't
yeah.
like it,
because yeah.
Yeah. that's not why you're doing it.
Yeah.
It's easy to say, but mm-hmm. I noticed that. And it's weird. It's interesting, because I never had really a very negative experience with that somebody like commented in a weird way or
mm-hmm.
no.
Well, rejection is hard. I actually tried out for Canadian Idol one time.
Oh, yeah?
You've heard of American Idol.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Right? And
yeah.
so we had like our own Canadian version of Canadian Idol.
Yeah.
Never made it past the first round. I mean,
so you went
really
there
weird
more
process.
Than once?
No, I only went once, because
okay.
I mean, the rejection was hard. But I mean, it's a weird process, because they put you in a group of like five people and you step forward and you give them like, you know, a chorus or a verse of a song. And at the time, like, you don't obviously have a choice of what five people you're grouped with. Like, you, unless you're going to the first round of judges.
Was it in Vancouver?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, at a mall. And this was the very first year they allowed instruments. So, like, I was just there as a solo singer and surrounded by someone that brought a keyboard. Another one had a guitar. I'm like, well, those are extremely talented people. I cannot compete with that. So, yeah, they only take, like, three from a group and didn't make it. So, you know, there's...
When was that?
Oh, gosh. This was after I came back from the UK. So it must have been 19?
Okay.
19 or 20?
But even that, I think, and that's my... So I'm trying to train my positive mindset as well. It's like, do you know how many people not getting to that stage
mm-hmm.
to actually try that
mm-hmm.
because they scared of rejection
mm-hmm.
and not even going to the first round?
Yeah. Well, I should have gone back. You know, thinking back to it, when you see all these American Idols that, you know, actually make it through a few rounds, is because they actually tried and went back and back and were, you know, convinced themselves that they were meant to be there. And that would have been like a stronger mindset. But I was really young at the time. So.
But if that must have been changed, because
mm-hmm.
in acting,
mm-hmm.
it's
all
about
rejection.
It's all
true.
About it. Like,
it's very true.
And that's why I think I
yeah.
was, when
yeah.
I was 19 or 20,
mm-hmm.
when I went to all those auditions for the good schools in Germany,
mm-hmm.
I was not ready for rejection. Like, I was like, if somebody says you're not good enough, I'm like, oh fuck, I should die.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I should not be here. It's true. And now I'm like, it's a game for me. Mm-hmm. I play the game. Mm-hmm. And but how did you change that?
Maturity.
Maturity.
Yeah. Just life emotional experience. Maturity. Yeah, life experience for sure.
Yeah.
Training, good training. You know, the more training you take, the more confidence you're building in yourself that you know you can do something. It's just a matter of getting in front of the right people.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, it's...
And you don't get everything anyways?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's something for everybody. So if you walk through one door and that one closes on you, then you just have to keep walking through the next one, the next one, the next one. And the perfect example of that was with my dad. And I love this story because my dad is 70. Gosh, I'm going to mess up his age. 74, 75. Mm. And when I started taking classes and getting into film, my dad's a goofy guy. I've always compared him to Robin Williams. He is super funny. He can do voices. He almost looks like Robin Williams. Like, he is my Robin Williams in my life. And so I think he was really meant to perform, and he's missed his calling by far. And so I encouraged him. I was like, hey, Dad, you should get into these classes. You'd have so much fun. You're still, there's that little boy inside you that would just eat up these classes, and these are really made for you. And so I got him like a voiceover class for his birthday, in-person acting class. And then he signed up with my agents, and he got his very first audition. And he always told me, he's like, there's no way. Like, when he did his first class, like, I don't know if I'm cut out for this. Like, I don't think this is my thing. I'm way too old for that. Like, who wants this old guy, this ugly old guy to always call himself ugly and big ears and big nose, very self-critical. And I was like, Dad, there's literally a role out there for everybody. I'm giving him the advice that I really needed to give myself.
Yeah.
And he got his first audition. And I coached him through it because he didn't really have a lot of self-tape experience, and, you know, 75, not great with technology. Yeah. And helped him get everything set up, coached him through the audition, what they're looking for. And he got his very first union role. On Private Eyes. And I had like 3 or 4 auditions of Private Eyes and never nailed it down. And he got his very first one. So I was so happy for him. Like, see, if anything, I hope that you've proved to yourself that it's never too late for anyone. Yeah. Because here you are, 74, 75, and you got your first role on a TV series.
And so, the same for you.
Yeah.
Right? But how long are you doing this now?
I just started 3 to 4 years ago now.
Yeah. And how did you went in there? Like, you just say, oh, I have to pick that up and go to a class, or?
How did I get into it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just started doing background work, really.
Mm.
And after doing background work, I was looking at the lead actors being like, why am I doing background? I can do what they're doing. I want to do that. That's what I want to do. I want to be in front of the camera. And so I started taking classes and doing auditions. So, yeah. Haven't nailed my first union role yet, but.
What would that change?
I think it, you know, you're still always looking for that validation and confidence. Confidence has been the key, because, you know, I have gone through a period of my life, and this came from singing too, and I had some stage fright experiences or being in front of people and you know, fear of being judged has hurt my confidence along the way. And so I think even getting back into singing, getting back into performing and being in front of people, like, that, there's that part of you in your adult life that you're not doing that so often. You're still kind of building that up again. And so even with auditioning and being in front of the camera and being in front of people, and there's still that, those voices inside you that's like, eh, maybe you're not cut out for this.
Mm.
So landing your first role, I think, would be, you know, a huge confidence booster, and to say, like, you're on the right path. Yeah. And keep going.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I'm still going to keep going.
It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's because we all, like, so many people in that have those experiences with stage fright, being scared of being in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that it's one of my big life stories of, like, how do I deal with fear,
mm-hmm.
right? How do you deal with those moments, situations?
Ooh, well, that's a good question. I'm still learning how to deal with it.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, getting out of your head and into your body, grounding was not even a word that I heard of before a couple of years ago, right? Now it's all the rage. Yeah, what does it mean?
To lay down on the ground?
Yeah, right? Yeah, literally planting 2 feet on the ground, do I? Yeah. How long do I have to lay here for before I'm not worried anymore? Yeah, breathing, like even just learning how to calm your heart rate and like physical tips on how to calm yourself. Really just using my voice for more positive instead of the negative.
Mm.
You can do this.
Mm.
You're already here. Like, you can go out and do this. Just start.
Mm.
Really, half the time telling myself, just start and you'll be fine.
So yeah.
Calming that little anxious voice. It's just a 3, 2, 1,
go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And same with film. It still happens to me being on camera. I'm all nerves until action, and then it takes me a second and then a minute. You know, it's so it's still learning, and it is a muscle that you have to conquer. And I love hearing stories and listening to other actors talk about how they still get fearful, still get nerves, still get butterflies before they hit the stage or get in front of camera. And because, you know, it's just a human thing.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of practice to, I think, get out of that phase, but.
Yeah, I think so too. It's just, but it makes us all more human, I think, if you be aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
experience huge,
and that's
right?
Yeah, like I might, if I look into my story of that, being in situations where I was so overwhelmed with social anxiety that I actually didn't really could speak up in front of people, or like couldn't deal with it as being on stage and all those things.
So you've gone through something similar then.
Hmm?
You've gone through something similar then.
That's what I say. Like, yeah, we all, yeah, like so many people do, and they don't talk about it, or they, like, it's all in the head. And
well, it shows as a weakness, right? People think of you. Yeah.
Which weakness is at the end strength.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But yeah, I just thought about how my path went into a place where I connect those things, because I noticed with coaching football and soccer, which I just do full time now, it's all I do at the moment, and sometimes acting if it comes up, I push myself every day to be in front of people.
Good for you.
Because, and I just noticed that last year or something when I like, oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do that like 10 years ago.
That's powerful.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I used another passion where automatically part of it is you have to speak up in front of people. You have to be the coach. You have to be, you have to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
That it somehow like I connected like my thought, like, oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's why I gained so much confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm doing that every day, which that's was right. My biggest fear.
And just having that realization, that aha moment is still building your confidence to do it. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Because, I mean, how I was in acting class even a couple of years ago is not even the same person I was in acting class today.
Yeah.
I would never put my hand up to go first in front of everybody. Now I do. And to your point, like, I purposely push myself to do that just so I can prove to myself that, like,
that whatever you do is okay. Exactly. There's no right or wrong.
Yeah. Well, good for you. I'm glad that you're conquering your fear too, and you're.
I mean, yeah, but yeah, it's also a long journey. I don't think.
Yeah.
I actually sometimes hope it will never go away, because it's a big part of the fuel,
mm-hmm.
which keeps me alive and keeps me going into uncomfortable places and situations.
I also had an acting coach once tell me that if you didn't have fear, you didn't care.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because if you really wanted to do a good job, there's a little piece of you that's always going to have a little bit of fear.
Yeah. And that's why I had those thoughts often, where I'm like, okay, as annoying as it is and as exhausting it can be, I'm not fighting it, because it will actually drown me,
mm-hmm.
but I will face it, and I will use it as a tool,
mm-hmm.
wherever I can, even mm-hmm. if there's days and sometimes weeks where you like don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
But at the end, I think it's an extra power if you
mm-hmm.
if you connect
exactly
deeply enough with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's powerful.
What's your current acting? Do you have anything going on at the moment, movie?
No, I don't. I'm just like, I love staying connected with classes if I don't have anything on the go.
I thought I saw that you did a class with Ian.
You have to take it with
him. He was my teacher for a whole year.
Was he really? He's incredible. Big shout out to Ian.
Yeah,
love him. So I will definitely be taking his next class. He made it interesting again and fun, and even like where he got me to a point, like, you know, we were doing some like silly exercises as you do in acting for like the first couple weeks, and then boom, third week did something extremely emotional. It's like, whoa, surprised myself I could get there so quickly. And I don't know why I have this fear of not being able to cry. There's just something that's been in me lately that
I was just about to ask, is there any fear at the moment you, which is present?
Yeah.
And that's...
It's getting emotional.
Being fear of getting emotional.
Yeah, that I can't get emotional enough for camera. Mm-hmm. Used to never be the case. I'd cry and I'd die. But for some reason, I don't know if it's just being desensitized to whatever's going on in the world lately and all the bad shit that's happening in life. Sorry if I can swear on your podcast. but I don't feel like I've really done a lot of crying lately. And so I don't know why. I find it hard to cry. And so to get you to that place to bring it to the surface so quickly and being able to do it on action, like that's a big fear of mine.
And that happened?
Yeah, I was able to do it, no problem, in this class. That was great. So
yeah,
it's that emotional connection piece and just wanting to make it feel real and not forced. And to bring that emotion to people watching you, so.
And I think that's what all those, and there's good teachers like Ian, who get you deep enough into yourself, unconscious often, where you actually can get to that emotion later on, because you build, they're creating an access to that somehow.
Yeah.
And then when you need to get there, you there.
yeah. You might have taken his class for a whole year, but you should come back. You should absolutely
Well, it was probably different classes. Like, I had improv with him, and then...
Okay.
I think scene studies or something.
Yeah, he's definitely used, I think, a couple exercises, like repeat exercises that he said he's done with students before. But I feel like even just keeping in practice, like even if you don't have projects on the go, just staying up with getting in front of people, memorization, oh my gosh, that's the other fear.
It's so hard.
Just memorizing lines and keeping up with it.
That's a good, because that's on my to-do list for today. I have, I'm helping out in a movie.
Oh, which one? Moment.
I don't know if I actually can talk about
it. Okay.
But
can't, don't worry.
I have a lot of lines.
Really?
And it's like,
is it indie film or is it a film?
Yeah, it's an indie film. Okay. And I'm like not a lot, but like probably the most I've ever had.
Okay.
In an English speaking movie. And I'm like, I'm very good in learning lines.
Yeah.
If I do it.
Right.
If I take the time down and I'm like, they're sitting there like, you should do it. Right.
Yes. So, what's your method? Do you have a method or do you
just, I have a method. And I have a method. My method is reading it out loud a couple times. There's different ways, but the most successful for me is, writing it down while you're speaking it out. Mm-hmm.
And Ian gave us that too.
Yeah, writing and speaking at the same time, two, three times, and then repeating it while I'm moving.
Which is so important.
I cannot sit and do lines. I have to move my body.
Yeah.
And that is scientifically proven that your brain, like your memory muscle, is more on if you move.
That makes sense.
Than when you sit.
Yeah.
And so I'm already moving while I'm explaining.
Yeah, it's true.
But it's like, I go just around the house of the rooms and just talk it out and out and out. Sometimes if I'm very busy, I did that in the past when I recorded it as a memo without my lines.
Mm-hmm.
So I speak the other part and then my lines are blank so I can drive, listen to the memo.
Yes.
And I know I have to fill the blanks with my
That's smart too.
Lines.
I have an app for that.
Where that not automatically?
Really handy. Yeah.
Automatically.
Yeah,
happen?
Exactly. Hears the last word of what you say and then it says the other person's lines for you. Like you record all the lines yourself, but then I'll show it to you after.
Nice.
Super handy. Yeah. I do it in the car when I'm driving. That's how I memorize my lines. I don't have a lot of time to just sit around
yeah.
and memorize. memorize lines either, but yeah, that's definitely my biggest downfall is just the time to, and even for auditioning, like I do my auditions like 10 o'clock at night after I put my kids to bed because I don't have a lot of time.
And so, how old are the other ones?
12 and 8.
12 and 8. Mm-hmm. All playing soccer?
All which?
All the three play soccer?
No, just one. Just my daughter. Yeah. The other one tried. He wasn't he wasn't a very good sportsmanlike player on the field out there, so pulled him right away.
What's your biggest rock?
In what in context? Life? In life?
Yeah, like when things are not going well.
Like what is my day to day fall back on?
Yeah.
Like a person or
I don't know,
like,
what comes up?
The reason why I ask a person is because I my mom comes to my mind. Because anytime I'm flying or falling, she is my first go to. She's my rock of like helping me point me down the right direction or even just give me advice or things to think about or usually I would say my husband, but it's funny because he's my rock in the sense that when I'm chaos, he's just like steady, tried and true. But he doesn't like to talk a lot, so I don't.
I mean, it makes sense to have.
And he doesn't also understand the industry or understand, you know, my half stuff I'm talking about. But yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's good to have different rocks.
For sure. That's a good way to put it. That's exactly, yeah.
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 What is your advice for a 38-year-old woman out there in the world with three kids? Feeling like I still have to pursue something which I never did.
I didn't want you to ask me hard questions. I don't know. Like, I don't even know if I have the experience to even give advice, or sometimes you question yourself like, I haven't even done it right, so what kind of advice, you know, is there to give? I mean, I think you and I talked earlier that there's really no right way of doing things, you know, whether you have kids sooner or you have kids later, or there's, you know, there's different perspectives, certain pros and cons. But I think following your heart and your gut from the beginning, you know, had I have followed my heart and my gut and actually pursued film, like, would I have been happier then? If I took my life down a different path, I don't know. But then to your point earlier, that it would have been my decision, you know, like you were saying, I wanted to make sure I did this because when you chose something, it was your decision. I feel like then I have only myself to blame for if things went well or things, you know, went sideways.
And that's a good point, because I always compare that with like playing a team sport or playing tennis or like a single sport. I noticed that I always played football and a lot of the team sports, and I'm a team player and I'm from a big family and I need to take care of people and all those things. But I did not learn in that way how to make my own decisions and being responsible just for myself. And then when the time came and I started playing tennis, it was a game changer for me because I loved it, because all of a sudden I was the only person in charge.
Right.
I had the fuck up on the court because like I can't blame anyone. I fucked it up and I'm like, it's just about fucking me.
It's true.
It's just fucking me.
Yeah.
And I have to figure it out. And as being the first, I don't play competitive just for fun, but still I'm a competitive person. And like in the beginning, I'm like screaming. I'm like, man, and like getting emotional. And the longer I was connected to myself, like, now I started beating my dad because I'm fucking calm.
Ah.
I'm like, I have to play my game.
Interesting.
I don't let you bother me because...
Yeah.
It's like, I'm in charge.
Such an aha moment, hey?
Yeah.
I've been so used to making decisions, you know, to make everyone happy. And,
I think
same
a
way,
lot
like,
of us
we're
are.
People pleasers, right?
So yes.
You want to do things that everyone's going to be agreed to and makes everyone else happy. And But you'll never be happy that way.
Yeah,
choose your own path, follow your own heart and your own gut.
Huh.
That's my 38-year-old advice.
How do you learn to listen to that? Because that's there when you're young and a kid.
Yeah.
I think it gets taken away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of the school system. I don't blame them, but
you say that. Neither am I.
And I appreciate all the people who work there and do their best.
School, I would, but I don't appreciate them
either. I think there's a lot of things taken away than giving to them.
Yeah.
And especially those like instincts and listen to yourself and what do I like? Who am I? As it like babies know that.
Mm-hmm.
Young kids know that.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they don't know it. And they come out of school and they don't know who they are anymore.
Yeah.
Like, something is going on.
It's
like,
so true.
Well,
it's actually this weird...
That's why I like to ask often people, like, what was your first dream or big picture of yourself, right? And I remember that for myself. One of the earliest things I wanted to become is a farmer.
Oh, really?
And the other thing is, I want to be on stage.
Yeah,
I knew that very, very early on.
Okay.
But I got distracted because people tell you that's not possible. And,
to do both.
And to do both. Okay. And I'm pretty sure one day I will do both. I have a farm and I will...
What do you want to farm?
I don't know.
Just want to like live on a ranch with animals?
I mean, I'm pretty close.
You are very close. So. You just take over this property one day.
Yeah,
that's cool.
But we need more farmers. It's not time restricted, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's for me was a big, big part to like accept that all the things I want to pursue, I want to do is not, there's no time restriction.
Mm-hmm.
And I got on my own way. Because I thought, oh, I'm 25, I didn't do it, I will never do it. Oh, I'm 28, I'm still not doing it,
mm-hmm.
I never do it.
Mm-hmm.
That was always in my way. And now I know, okay, things will take time, but if you keep feeding the seed, it will come at one point.
Yeah. I think that's really cool. I mean, even what you just talked about farming and film, like both of those options to your point, like there's really no end date to those. Like even when I think about film, like okay, trying auditioning now, even if I were to take a break in auditioning, I could still go back to it.
Yeah,
you know, there's no end time. Like there's other professions who are like, oh, it's too late now, I'm not gonna go to med school for 7 years and become a doctor. Well, maybe I could, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel like that, you know, there is a point to where you maybe become too old for that. But
so, but how to come back to the question, how do you listen to your instinct?
Well, and I think I'm actually thinking of it in a different way where I'm actually going through that with my daughter right now, right? So she's in grade 10, she's going through high school, and she's going through, I think, the same like inner conflict that I experienced. So now I'm trying to train myself to help guide her through this process of what do I do after high school in a different way than how I was guided.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's really hard as a parent to give advice, you know, that's conflicting with what she's wanting, and it's finding
to not take
it doesn't
her
really
instinct
make sense,
away.
But yeah, exactly.
Mm.
Like so, I'll give you an example. I mean, I'm pushing her right now to do like lifeguarding, and I see that she can be a really great lifeguard. I see all the benefits to being a lifeguard. She's a strong swimmer. She loves being in the water. That was her passion. She swims at the lake all the time, and she just took her courses and she passed them with flying colors. And she hadn't even taken swimming lessons before. She's just naturally a strong swimmer that way. And then she says to me the other day, like, but Mom, I don't want to do lifeguarding. I don't love being around the chlorine. I don't love the smell of it. I was like, ooh, that was a big blow for me. I invested money into those expensive courses. I really think that she could be so good at it. And there's a bit of a career in it. And I can at least take her through university or college if she wants to go. And now to sit back and actually, like, let her decide what she wants to do
And she maybe listened to her instinct. And
I think that's what it comes down to. Like, I might have to just bite my tongue. It's like, okay.
If your instinct is no.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's something else that she wants to do. Maybe I should listen to that and learn from the mistakes that maybe I made or, you know, maybe advice I was given younger, my younger years. But so I'm trying to change that perspective and how I help guide her, and that's really hard.
And how is it for yourself? Because you're a mom of three, there's not much space, time to actually like listen to your own body, listen to your instinct, like,
for sure. Yeah,
what is right, what is wrong. But somehow you
I'm definitely
got that there.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of, like, I'm definitely, I don't want to say burden, but I mean, I have responsibility that holds me back from what I truly want to do.
Yeah.
Gosh, if I could just go live in California and the sunshine state, like I'm destined for sunshine, Hawaii, I don't care, and pursue film. Like that's my biggest dream right now, is I would love to get paid to travel. And if I could use film to do that, that's my biggest dream. But yeah, responsibility holds me back a little bit right now. I can't really do that with my family, but.
Do you believe in it?
Do I believe in it?
Yeah. To be able one day, sooner than
one later? One day. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. That's sit down again if that happens.
Exactly. That's what's coming for me. And so I'm just really wanting to set myself up right now so that I can live that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. In one way or another.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks so much for being my guest. And
thank you. I feel like I had some aha moments even just sitting here.
Right? Your life is more
interesting. It's like a therapy session.
Life is more interesting than we always think.
Well, yeah, we're retrospective. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I mean, that's also like my personality. I'm just trying to be an open book too, and I want to just think out loud what I think, what I feel, my questions. It's
It's refreshing. And I think that's important. I mean, even with social media and going through COVID, and we don't talk a lot about that stuff openly. Yeah. You know, as
and we're not listening a lot to each other anymore.
It's true.
We're just passing.
That's right. Surface level conversation. Surface level. Which you probably find with even coaching and parents and colleagues. It's all surface level.
That's why it's for me very exhausting often, because I'm not a surface level guy.
Yeah.
But I have to protect myself often. Like,
yeah.
I cannot have deep conversations with everyone.
Yeah. That's true. It's exhausting kind of conversation. Yeah. Or even if you get into the more deeper, like, politics, religion, all of that that's impacting our worlds.
Yeah.
Even just what's happening in my own neighborhood, it's exhausting. Like, I feel like I'm negative all the time just trying to protect our community, you know, and you come across as, you get labeled really easily. Yeah. To protect yourself.
Yeah. All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
I wish you all the best for the near and long future career of being an actress.
We'll be on set together again.
We will be on soon. Set, yeah. I would like to make an official promise here.
Ooh.
Why are we not promising that we do a song together
one day? That would be
fun. Sooner than later.
Yes. Yes.
I write so many songs at the moment, like, there should be something we can figure out at some point.
Yeah. Okay, deal.
Let's do it.
Promise. The sun is rising and dipping.